Chapter 7. Cianne rushed through a mental checklist of her appearance. Her hair was a little windblown from the bike ride, her cheeks rosy, but when were they not rosy? Her blouse, dress, and shoes were acceptably clean. It wasn't unusual for her to carry a purse, so that wouldn't be a source of suspicion. She glanced at her fingernails. Not too bad. "Emery," she said, missing only a heartbeat. She grinned. "I didn't expect to see you home so soon."
"I didn't expect you home so late,"
he countered, his eyes narrowing without losing any of their brilliance.
"Did you take the scenic route from Patrice's house?"
A flush inched up Cianne's neck.
"I did visit her today," she said, adjusting her purse strap on her shoulder.
She pressed her thumb into her collar as she did so, ensuring that it hid her new charm necklace.
"How did you know? Did you run into her?"
Cianne swallowed.
"Did she send you a telegram?"
Emery chuckled, but it wasn't a happy laugh.
"Oh no. Why use the telegraph when a certain nosy apprentice might be around to swipe the message? She found me through the lavatory mirror, and I believe it's been approximately 6 hours since you stopped by her home to ask her about Saroj Prendi."
The creeping flush chilled white and sunk back into Cianne's spine.
"Avioski, you couldn't keep a secret if your life depended on it."
But of course, Magician Avioski had told Emery. Cianne was only an apprentice. Magician Thane was technically her guardian.
"I went shopping,"
she said, wincing as the poor lie escaped her lips. She had no bags, no receipts, nothing to prove it, and Emery knew her well enough to know she couldn't tolerate window shopping for 6 hours. She swallowed a sigh and straightened, but her 5'3" frame had nothing on Emery's.
"I didn't do anything wrong,"
she said, moving down the hallway. She tried to pass him, but he caught her elbow.
"By all means, enlighten me on what you did do,"
he said. Cianne felt her own fire pulse outward from her chest.
"I'm not dabbling with excisioners, if that's what you're worried about," she snapped, pulling her arm free.
The reference to Lyra, Emery's ex-wife, was too hard of a blow, but Cianne stomped into the kitchen before she could glimpse his face. Fennel jumped up from where he lay by the dining room table, but Cianne ignored him and fled up the stairs to her bedroom. She dropped her purse on the floor, kicking it under the bed, and yanked the clip from her hair. Uneven orange curls tumbled over her shoulders. She shook them out before placing both hands on her hips, then sucked in one deep breath, and another. She didn't even hear the paper magician's footsteps approach her door, just his voice.
"Cianne."
"I want to Gosport," she said, not turning around.
"Gosport and back in 6 hours.
"You're not the only one with a glider,"
she lied, hoping he wouldn't call her out on it.
"Magician Avioski couldn't tell me much, so I went to Gosport to look around. I didn't find much, but I thought I'd make the effort. I've gotten weary of letting our enemies find me first."
The doorframe creaked as Emery leaned against it.
"I thought you were over this, running off and taking matters into your own hands. I thought we talked about this on several occasions."
She turned around. The fire had left his eyes, but his face remained mirthless.
"You talked at me about it, maybe."
She sighed.
"I'm not jumping through mirrors hunting down an excisioner with a gun again."
Half lie.
"Saroj wasn't anywhere near Gosport."
Hopefully a lie. "But he could have been."
"He could also be in my closet," she quipped, "or hiding in the ivy."
She gestured to the window.
"Or having tea with the butcher, biding his time until one of us needs a pound of pork. You yourself said that Saroj has no reason to come after us."
"Or does he? North. Why did he go north?"
"Then you have no reason to go after him,"
he replied. He stood straight and ran a hand back through his hair, making the waves fall unevenly about his face.
"It makes me sick to think about it, Cianne. Lyra, Grath. It's
It's like you have a checklist for dangerous criminals tucked into your pocket, and you won't be satisfied until you've had a personal encounter with each.
Cini folded her arms, more for comfort than out of anger.
I just want to know my family is safe.
Are they?
It wasn't a mocking question, just a prod into what Cini had found. She debated telling him, but she didn't want Emery dwelling on her unnatural use of magic. She'd kept the secret for too long to tell him now.
I don't think he left England, she replied, softer. And if that's true, I want to know why.
Did you know he escaped near a naval base? Even he wouldn't risk crossing the water near so many soldiers.
What if he's trying to lose himself among the common folk, all the while harvesting them as he plans his great escape? Or worse?
Emery stepped into the room, a long breath passing through his nostrils. He set a heavy hand on either of Cini's shoulders.
I messaged Alfred today, but he had little information to share. I will contact him again and ask to be kept informed.
He offered.
Will that be enough?
Would it? Cini didn't know.
So long as he doesn't involve you in the case, she said.
Or you,
Emery added. His grip lightened, as did his tone.
Promise me you won't go after this man.
Cini frowned.
I'll promise if you will.
A slight smile touched Emery's lips and eyes.
Promise.
Promise.
He kissed her lightly on the lips.
Let's find something for dinner,
he said.
And pack your bags. I'm to introduce you to Magician Pritwin Bailey tomorrow morning.
Nerves roused Cini early the next morning, but she took her time getting ready, humming old lullabies to herself as she dressed and pinned her hair in an effort to keep herself calm. She chose a rose-colored dress from her closet. She'd obtained a few rather nice pieces of clothing during her apprenticeship, and summoned Jonto to help her with its buttons. She looped a light red ascot around her neck, and, despite the warm weather, the dark olive jacket that had come with the dress. She left the matching hat on her bed while she had a boiled egg for breakfast. It would be impossible to stomach more than that.
Today is the start of the finishing, she thought as she broke into the shell of her small meal.
A couple weeks with Prit, no, Magician Bailey, and I'll take my test. I'll become a magician. Emery entered the kitchen, covering a yawn with his knuckles. Cini slid the spoon into the egg's flesh.
I won't be Emery's apprentice anymore. No more secrets, no more gossip, no more waiting.
She smiled to herself and chewed on the bit of egg. It grew bland in her mouth.
Unless I fail.
She could take the test again, eventually, but Cini suspected that the humiliation of failure would carry a greater weight than the failure itself.
Should I be jealous?
Emery asked as he pulled a half loaf of bread out of the cupboard, cheese and herb bread Cini had made 2 days ago. Cini glanced up from her egg.
Hmm?
I don't think you've worn that since Patrice's luncheon. Magician Bailey will be impressed.
Cini rolled her eyes.
I want to make a good impression.
Emery chuckled to himself and buttered 2 slices of bread.
The buggy should be here soon. Do you have your suitcase packed?
So eager to get rid of me.
Eager?
He repeated, rolling back the sleeves of his favorite indigo coat.
My kitchen will be empty in 2 days, and I'll be forced to purchase my own groceries. How could I be eager for that?
Cini smiled and scooped out more egg.
You could always have Jonto cook your meals.
In fact, Emery once had tried to get Jonto to cook his meals. It had taken the paper magician 2 days to reconstruct the right hand and arm of the paper skeleton, which had burned off after Jonto attempted to light the coals in the oven.
I'll be sure to stock up on sandwich supplies,
Emery murmured.
And all you'll miss is the food, hmm?
His eyes glimmered.
I may miss the midnight companionship.
Cini flushed.
Emery Thane!
That was one time. Emery just chuckled, the cursed man.
Peeling the shell off her breakfast, Cianne asked, When was the last time you saw Magician Bailey?
Saw him?
Emery repeated between bites.
I suppose at that fundraising banquet, the one where a certain hot-tempered young waitress dumped a pitcher of wine on a guest's lap.
He smiled.
Spoke to him, though. My graduation from Praff, unless you count the recent telegrams and mailbirds.
You really don't like each other, then?
He doesn't like me,
Emery corrected.
And I can't blame him. But he's not the most remarkable fellow himself.
Emery! The paper magician smiled, the expression all in his bright green eyes, like he knew something Cianne didn't. Cianne sighed. She would miss those eyes. But her test had been scheduled for 3 weeks from today. Compared with how long she'd already waited, 3 weeks was next to nothing. The buggy arrived. A violet paper butterfly rested on the seat beside the driver, bearing the cottage's address on its right wing in Emery's handwriting. Emery loaded Cianne's suitcase into the automobile's trunk before taking a seat beside her. The buggy turned around and headed back into London.
Relax,
Emery whispered after a few minutes on the road. He placed a hand over Cianne's, which had been twisting a pleat in her skirt between thumb and middle finger.
You'll be fine.
Would I pass your test? She asked back, keeping her words low. If you tested me, would I pass?
It's all the same test. There are certain regulations.
Maybe the answer keys are all the same, Cianne began. But that doesn't make it all the same test. Emery hummed in agreement. He said nothing more, only took Cianne's hand between his own. The warmth of his skin buzzed up her arm like fireflies. The buggy drove through London, hitting a bit of horse traffic near Newington. Cianne focused on her pleats as the buggy passed over the River Thames. They drove by Parliament Square and headed west out of the main city, toward Shepherd's Bush, where Magician Bailey lived. Shepherd's Bush was a mostly rural and residential area spotted with farmland. Cianne watched the houses scroll by, their yards and walls growing with each passing mile. She soon found herself staring at homes bigger than the cottage, then bigger than Magician Avioski's house, then bigger yet. The space between the houses grew too, and the street became narrower. She glanced at Emery, but he seemed just as curious as she. Of course, he had never been to Magician Bailey's home. After a few more miles, the buggy reached the end of a long dirt road with a row of grass growing in the middle of it. It turned about in a wide circle, pulling up to a thick and well-pruned wall of bushes that acted as a fence around a property that seemed larger than the entire mill squats. The trim grounds had no flowers, only decorative shrubbery of all shapes and sizes. Cianne stepped out of the buggy, her movements sluggish, her mouth agape. The house itself stood a dozen times larger than the cottage, built of brick that looked like sandstone in the sun and mauve in the shade. Three chimneys rose from the tightly shingled roof, and every window held three glass panes trimmed with white. Ivy covered half the house, including a smaller section on the left that looked to be the servants' quarters, but seemed unoccupied. The mansion dwarfed Cianne the way Big Ben might dwarf an ant. She had thought Magician Avioski's house excessively large, but Cianne's entire family, her cousins included, couldn't possibly use all the space inside this manor. But perhaps the starkest difference was the lack of paper. Emery's home was covered in paper wards and paper decor. Even the gardens sported paper plants. But not a shred of magic touched this house. It looked positively normal, if expensive. She glanced to Emery. This can't be the right place.
Oh, I have a feeling it is,
he commented, circling the buggy to pull Cianne's suitcase from the trunk.
The textbook industry must be doing remarkably well.
Textbooks?
Last I heard, that was Pritt's specialty. Enchanted textbooks that rewrite themselves depending on the student's reading level, diagrams that pop off the page, and the like. Very popular in America.
Did you not have them at Praff?
She frowned. No. But wouldn't that have been remarkable? Perhaps I wouldn't have dragged my feet about folding so much had my donor provided them.
Emery chuckled.
Cianni scanned the bushes until she found an arched gateway several paces to her left. She took a few steps toward it before turning back to Emery and asking, Do we let ourselves in?
Emery opened his mouth to respond, then spied over the bushes and answered, Seems help is on the way.
Cianni followed his gaze and stood on her toes. She spied a cobbled walkway leading from the mansion's central door, and a flash of sunny blonde hair bobbing along it, hair that made Cianni think of Delilah. Moments later, the gate unbolted, and a man Cianni's age stepped through. Though it had been 2 years, Cianni recognized him immediately.
Bennett Cooper, she asked.
He had graduated with Cianni from Tagus Praff, having placed third in class. Cianni had placed first. Bennett offered a sheepish smile. Sunlight glinted off his straight, equally sunny hair. He wore simple tan slacks with a simple white collared shirt without pockets under his red apprentice's vest. Cianni wondered if she should have worn her apprentice's apron as well.
Hi, Cianni, he said.
He then stiffened like a soldier and added,
Magician Thane, it's a pleasure to meet you finally.
Bennett took a few long strides and offered his hand to the paper magician, who stood taller in height by several inches. Emery shook the apprentice's hand with an amused twinkle in his eye. Bennett continued,
I've heard a great many things about you.
And you still shook my hand?
Emery asked.
Your mother raised you well.
Bennett blinked wide eyes.
Sir?
Emery patted Bennett's shoulder and strolled up to the gate.
I'm sure Magician Bailey has chattered quite a bit about me in the last few days.
Ah, here he comes now.
Bennett glanced in Cianni's direction and finicked with the elbows of his shirt before hurrying to the gate. He pushed it open and held it for several seconds before a tall man emerged. Cianni recognized him from the memory of Emery's secondary school experience, though Pritwin Bailey had certainly grown these last 15 years. He stood straight and narrow, wearing simple clothes, as Bennett did, though they had been well-tailored and made of fine materials. His pale skin looked as if it had never seen the light of day, and his dark hair only made his complexion appear more washed out. He had a long, slim face free of any facial hair, and a pair of thin gold spectacles perched on his nose. But what struck Cianni foremost about his appearance was the lack of a smile on his face, or any sign of goodwill whatsoever.
Thane,
he said, clasping his hands behind his back.
There would be no handshake then.
You seem unchanged. I do try,
Emery replied. His lip quirked, almost as if to smile, and Pritwin's mood seemed to grow even grimmer. Bennett cleared his throat.
Magician Bailey, this is Cianni Twill, Magician Thane's apprentice.
I know who she is,
Magician Bailey said, and though his response was bland, Cianni didn't detect malice in his tone. Good. The man had no reason to hold qualms against her, save by association. Magician Bailey adjusted his spectacles and looked down at Cianni.
I hope you've come prepared. I have no intention of postponing your test for lack of study.
Cianni chewed and swallowed a frown before it could touch her lips.
I assure you, I'm quite prepared.
Emery said,
Miss Twill could take the test tonight and pass. I have every confidence in her abilities.
Magician Bailey said.
And that confidence is the reason you're leaving her with me, is it? I'm sure there's something you can teach her that slipped my mind. Something somewhere in this enormous house of yours.
How are the acoustics, if I may ask?
Magician Bailey's face took on the puckered look of someone who has tasted a bad lemon. Bennett began playing with his sleeve elbows again.
I'm sure the acoustics are grand,
Cianni said, turning to Emery for her suitcase. She gave him a warning glare, but he pretended not to see it.
Oh, here, allow me!
Bennett chimed, hurrying forward to take the suitcase before Cianney could get a grip on it.
Well,
Emery said after a few seconds of silence between himself and the other folder,
I suppose I should be on my way. You're in well-practiced hands, Miss Twill. You may be a folder the next time I see you.
Cianney paused at that, meeting Emery's gaze, wondering if he noticed her surprise. I hope it's not that long, she thought, urging him to read her mind. He smiled at her enigmatically.
She may be,
Bailey agreed, though he seemed to emphasize may without actually emphasizing it at all. Perhaps Cianney had imagined it. She wanted to say goodbye to Emery, to embrace him, to kiss the line of his jaw. But she certainly couldn't with two witnesses, three if she counted the buggy driver, who had worked his way through half a fag while still seated in his automobile. Emery nodded to the other paper magician and to Bennett before telling Cianney,
Good luck. You know how to reach me in case you need anything.
Cianney nodded, feeling an unseen band of rubber stretch between her and Emery as he turned to go.
Good day, Magician Thane,
Bennett yelled after him. Emery waved politely before getting in the car. The driver dropped his burning cigarette out the window and turned back onto the road. Cianney frowned as the buggy drew away. 3 weeks suddenly seemed a very long time.
Bennett, fetch that,
Magician Bailey said, and Bennett, suitcase still in hand, rushed over to the fallen cigarette and stomped it out with his heel, then picked it up and pocketed it. Magician Bailey headed back through the gates and into the house without further ado. Cianney hesitated, wondering if she should follow, but fortunately Bennett reappeared at her side and gestured toward the cobbled path.
This way, Cianney. It's all right to call you that, isn't it?
It is my name, Cianney said, letting herself relax. You called me that at Praff, and I'm not a magician yet, besides.
Bennett smiled.
Neither am I, obviously.
He cleared his throat.
This is the front of the house. That window up there in the corner on the third floor is yours. Gets a little warm in the early afternoon if you don't pull the shades.
Cianney nodded, taking in the grounds of the mansion. They seemed even larger now that she could see beyond the bushy perimeter.
It's all very impressive, she said.
Isn't it?
Bennett asked.
Unless you've lost something. It's a pain to find things in there.
Is it just you and Magician Bailey?
He nodded.
A maid comes by 3 times a week, if that counts for anything.
Pets?
No, Magician Bailey doesn't like animals, he answered, looking ahead at his tutor,
whose quick strides had already pulled him to the front door. The folder didn't wait for either apprentice before letting himself in.
He's a little standoffish, Cianney said.
At the same moment, Bennett asked,
Does Magician Thane keep pets?
He's allergic, but I do have a paper dog, she said.
She smiled.
His name is Fennel. He's folded up in that case, actually.
Oh, interesting. But no busy, I take it,
he said, referring to the Jack Russell Terrier Cianney had kept in her dorm at Tagus Praff.
No busy. She's back with my family now.
I'm sure Fennel will be a treat. Just...
He paused.
Keep him away from Magician Bailey, just in case. I mean, Magician Bailey is great and all, but it's better to be safe.
They reached the door, which Bennett opened for Cianney. A broad hallway, painted white with dark-stained oak floorboards underfoot, greeted them. An oriental rug of burgundy and navy covered most of the floor. At the end of the hall spiraled a set of white banister stairs. The left side of the hall opened onto a grand sitting room, complete with a fainting sofa and a pianoforte. A 5-tiered crystal chandelier hung above a crystal table in the center of the room, upon which sat a tray of unused teacups. It looked very much the opposite of Emery's front room. Surfaces were uncluttered, or they only sported 1 or 2 pieces of show, such as a vase or music box. It all looked rather immaculate.
The right side of the hallway opened onto a smaller room. It had a small table with four chairs and a granite fireplace, but didn't appear to be meant for dining. Perhaps snacking? Sini wasn't sure what sort of rooms could fill a house this size, particularly one that was only home to two people. She tore her eyes away, trying not to stare. "So you signed up for paper?" Bennett laughed, an awkward, airy laugh.
"Not really. I was assigned it by Magician Avioski. She didn't give me much room for negotiation."
"She didn't give me any either," Sini agreed. Bennett seemed pleased to hear that he was not alone in his experience. She wanted to add, "But I'm glad it turned out this way." But Bennett interrupted the thought with,
"Well, I'll start the tour here. Down this way is the leisure library and the guest lavatory, as well as Magician Bailey's office. But don't go in there unless invited. And if the door's closed, don't knock. He doesn't like being disturbed when he's working."
"Working on what?" Sini asked, followed by, "Where is Magician Bailey?"
Shouldn't he be giving her the tour?
Bennett
said, glancing up and down the hallways on either end of the spiral stairs.
"I think he's in his office.
He was in there before you came. He's getting ready for your testing. There are preparation materials of some kind. He couldn't really tell me what."
Sini nodded slowly. It made sense, at least, but so far Pritwin Bailey's reclusiveness made Emery look like a socialite.
"Down here,"
Bennett gestured to the left,
"is the kitchen, the casual dining hall, and the formal dining hall. You can tell the difference by the table size and the lighting. The formal dining hall has color-shifting glass and a longer table."
"Oh," Sini said. "Color-shifting glass."
That was a spell she didn't know. She'd have to look it up and learn how to cast it. Her youngest sister Margot would faint to have such a spell in her bedroom.
"The chef will be here in about an hour," he added. "Past the stairs."
"Chef?" Sini asked.
"Yes, ma'am,"
Bennett said. He smiled and brushed hair off his forehead with his free hand. He certainly was a handsome man.
"Magician Bailey has one come in every weekday, and on weekends we fend for ourselves."
"I can cook,"
Sini offered as Bennett moved to the base of the spiral stairs.
"I don't mind. I enjoy it."
"Really?"
Bennett asked. He glanced from her face to her feet and back again.
"This weekend, maybe? Magician Bailey won't cancel his cook. Besides, I'm sure you'll be busy with your preparations for the test and all."
Sini nodded.
"Past the stairs is the sunroom, and through there the greenhouse, though I only have a few plants thriving at the moment. Magician Bailey hasn't tried to grow anything for a while. It's a lot of work. And there,"
he pointed to a back corner of the house with his suitcase hand, "is a storage room and the hallway to the servants' quarters, which we don't use." Sini committed the layout to memory, though the last bit proved difficult, as she hadn't seen the rooms herself. The house was so large, she wondered if even her quick memory would be able to master it. Bennett continued the tour through the second and third floors, pointing out the music room, the technical library, where all his study materials lay, along with two very large maps, a few guest bedrooms, his bedroom, a drawing room, trophy room, deck, and study. Farther in, he indicated another drawing room, two dressing rooms, a materials room for magic crafting, a private sitting room, a study just for apprentices, and an assortment of different-sized lavatories. A small one resided just outside Sini's bedroom. If the sheer, needless vastness of the mansion didn't make Sini's head spin, the idea of having her own bathing room did. Even at Tagus Praff, she'd never had that luxury. Bennett opened the door to her room, which had indeed been overwarmed by the afternoon sun. It had a long off-white rug running perpendicular to the dark oak floorboards, which readily creaked under their footsteps. A rather large bed with rose-colored blankets sat in the middle of the room,
extending out from the length of wall between two westward-facing windows. A dainty glass table and two white chairs for private breakfasting were arranged in one corner. Against the wall with the door rested a large wardrobe, and across the corner from it, a tall dresser. It was one of the smaller bedrooms Cianne had seen in the mansion, but it was easily 2.5 times the size of her room at the cottage. The cottage. Cianne missed it already. Bennett sat her suitcase down on one of the chairs.
I'll give you a chance to settle in, and I'll call you down to dinner, unless you'd like to eat alone in your room.
No, I'll come down, she said, feeling a little lost in the wide space.
Do you like it? I could move you, Bennett offered. I made sure to dust it this morning, and the sheets are clean. Is it too hot? Oh, I forgot the pitcher and basin.
Cianne smiled. It's lovely, and I don't need a pitcher with a lavatory right next door, she said. Thank you. It's just different, that's all. Bennett nodded, seeming pleased.
All right. My window is just below yours, so if you want to send a paper messenger to me for anything, please do.
Perfect, Cianne said. Bennett hesitated a moment, then nodded and excused himself. Cianne took the time to hang up her clothes and organized her personal items until dinner, which Magician Bailey took in his office. Afterward, Cianne arranged her study materials in her dresser drawers. She could use one of the desks in the apprentice's study tomorrow. She slid her charm necklace around her neck and under her blouse, then reanimated Fennel, who sniffed about his new surroundings with a papery vigor. Letting out a sigh, Cianne leaned against the mattress of the bed, surprised at how soft it felt. The sun had just begun to set, but perhaps she would turn in early and get a fresh start tomorrow. She did have a lot of work ahead of her. A faint tapping on the rightmost window caught her attention. Lifting its curtains, she spied a turquoise paper butterfly hovering outside the glass. A message from Bennett? It took a few heaves to open the seldom-used windowpane. Once she did, the butterfly fluttered in and gracefully landed on the glass table. Cease, she said, stilling its wings. She turned it over and unfolded it, recognizing the handwriting hidden inside its body immediately. Bennett hadn't sent this spell. Emery had.